Welcome to episode 25 of the Harry Potter Lexicon podcast. My name is Steve Vandrark, and I am the creator and editor-in-chief of the Harry Potter Lexicon.
And I'm Nick Moline, the tech wizard for the Lexicon, who makes things work and spends all his time moving servers.
Yeah, you did that recently. Move servers.
Twice.
Because, you know, we have nothing whatsoever else to do on the Lexicon but move servers around. But it is faster, which is very nice. I think some of the editors were exclaiming about how much quicker it was for editing. I realize that our users, I don't know if they're seeing a difference. I don't know about that. But for those of us editing and managing all this stuff, a little bit of extra speed on the editing is really a nice feature. Some of us, you know, I don't know who would do this, but spend literally hours and hours staring at the screens and editing things, and so a little extra speed can be very helpful. So thank you for that.
Yeah, no kidding. I think we finally got a server that's working. I've still got one more thing to move. I'm going to move the solar server so that I'm not, because the service that I'm going forward has gotten really expensive, so.
I'm going to pretend like I know what you're talking about. I didn't hear the word expensive. That one caught my ear. But the rest of it, I'm just going, oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Isn't that? Okay, good. Except for the expensive part, of course. But
yeah.
So what is new? What's new? I can tell you all sorts of things that are new. I mean, like, you know, little bitty things and slightly bigger things. So what's new on your end, on the tech wizard end?
Well, like I said, first of all, I've been sick a lot lately. I had pneumonia last week, so if I sound a little scratchy, it's remnants of that.
Yeah, you sound horrible, but we're gonna deal with it. But.
So what little time I have had to work on the Lexicon has been focused on like top priority thing. Like as you mentioned. Lately, it's been so slow that I had to go change servers again. So that, you know, that was almost a whole day of work trying to get everything moved and try to make it as seamless as possible. So,
see, that's interesting. You mean those of us, which is probably 99% of the people in the world, just hearing the idea of taking on an entire website and just switching it to a new server is a little scary. You know, so I'm very glad that you know how to do that.
Yeah. Especially something like the Lexicon, you know, you have something to the tune of 60 gigabytes of images on the Lexicon. I'm not sure you realize that. You uploaded them
all. And we keep adding new ones.
Yeah. And so it's a massive thing to move. And the database is huge because we have, you know, 100,000 entries.
Right. You know, it's so funny because, you know, the original, I know I've said this before, but the original Lexicon was pure text. I mean, I actually found one of my old pages. I thought these things were all gone. I actually found one of my old pages from way back when everything was text. And it was text because everybody was on a dial-up modem back then in, you know, 1999, 2000. And so it had to be fast if it was going to be useful, because otherwise, if you're waiting for pictures to load, you had to wait forever. And so you talk about 60 gigabytes of images that we have now. That's just mind-boggling by comparison. I realize that probably a lot of people now just go, well, whatever, of course you got images. But, yeah, it's a pretty exciting thing that we can just put all those images on there, even though we make more work for you.
I don't think I've ever had to move a site quite this massive, and the fact that I've now had to do it three times in the last year is hopefully this is the last time.
Yeah, I hope so for your sake. Yeah. And because we keep adding new artwork, which is cool. I mean, some of the artwork, I'll be honest with you, I find artwork sometimes, and it's the most beautiful stuff, because I said this, I can remember talking about this, you know, 10, 15 years ago when the convention started. And just seeing the artwork that some of these artists are creating, it's amazing. I mean, the talent and the vision, I'm going to say that part because I think that's part of what blows me away. Because people are taking these stories and not being trapped by the film images and just letting their imagination go and showing kind of a new picture of some of these things. The artwork that fans create is amazing, but so much of it was created 10 years ago, 15 years ago, if you go and start searching, you'll find these beautiful images, say, on DeviantArt. Well, the artists are no longer, number one, they're no longer often creating Harry Potter artwork. But another thing is, even if they are, they're no longer putting it on DeviantArt or whatever. So you end up with unable to contact these wonderful artists, and I wish so much that I would be able to... that I would be able to have a better way of getting a hold of some of these people and getting permission to use their work, because we don't publish anything, we don't put anything out on without, without permission. So anything, I mean, of course, the big thing we've been talking about all the time is timelines and search and all that stuff. So are we getting some progress there?
We're getting some progress. They are, unfortunately, a bit... I mean, it's a big thing, and a lot of it is background. So we
don't see any difference.
Exactly. You can't see it, but I put a lot of work into it. the big thing, what I'm doing is, I mentioned I'm moving the Solar Surfer. Well, part of the reason I'm doing that is because I am redoing search.
Oh, good. Okay.
On the site to make the facets better, to hopefully have a little bit better relevance, and when you search for something, have the thing you're searching for be the first result.
Little things
like that.
Yeah, but I understand from what you've said that that's not always as easy as it sounds. But
it really isn't. And basically, I'm having to go do my own custom search for it.
Glad you know how to do that.
I'm not an expert in search. Believe me, I don't work for Google, but. It's definitely something that is requiring a lot of work. And so because I've been working on it from that perspective, I'm actually using the search to power the new timeline.
Oh, okay, good. Because that's, I'm excited to see it. I mean, right now we see pieces of the timeline at the bottom of every events page, for example. Mm-hmm. And I'll scroll through that, and it's so much fun to look at that and kind of see how things fit together that I can't wait to see the whole thing in all its glory. Okay, let's talk about the world of Harry Potter.
Okay.
What's new? I don't know. It doesn't seem like there's been much since Fantastic Beasts came out.
We're in one of those slightly quiet times. We forget from back in the times of the books that we had these little quiet times for like 3 or 4 years in between.
We should be used to this.
We should be.
But that's true. That's true. Although Fantastic Beasts, the new version of Fantastic Beasts is coming out soon.
Yeah, that's this month, right?
Yeah, maybe a week or two or something like this, with some new creatures in there. And I'm wondering again whether they're going to be creatures from the film, or whether they're going to be something totally created new. There's some new creatures in the. Like in the story of Ilvermorny, there's the new creatures, the North American magical creatures that are mentioned. It'd be nice to get some of those listed. So anyway, we'll see what comes. But that's coming up. I guess the audio version, Eddie Redmayne's going to be doing the audio for.
Yeah, I've got that pre-ordered.
Do you?
Yeah.
Nice.
On Audible.
Nice.
Using all my credits.
Okay. Sure.
But yeah, that's a. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It's kind of odd to think of a textbook being an audiobook, but it'll be interesting.
Yeah, okay. Textbook, in this magical, fantasy world, because if you read the book, there are whole sections of it which I granted are a little bit like exposition, obviously, but they're so full of crazy magical fun stuff that I can see it would be fun to listen to. I mean, think about all that stuff about beasts and beings and all that kind of thing in the whole introduction section. I mean, that's good stuff. I love that part. So, anyway. You put a note, and I'm looking at the notes that we have here, and you put that Rowling has apparently finished at least a draft of Fantastic Beasts 2. Why do you say that? What did you see?
She posted a tweet. It was about last week. Of course, now I can't find it because she tweets prolifically.
A lot.
Yeah.
Which is good.
And she actually had a picture of the top of the manuscript.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. And it was something like just handed this off or something like that. So it's kind of
okay.
Like,
which is funny because part of me is like, oh, that's cool. The other part of me is like, okay, give me a movie. Otherwise, really doesn't matter. I like seeing the pictures of filming, you know, mm-hmm. which is so funny because, you know, that's when the films were originally made from the books, I always kind of held everything at arm's length. Yeah, that's cool. Doesn't look like I imagined it, kind of a thing. Whereas this is, that's it. So right. I'm a little bit more excited about seeing, you know, pictures of filming and so for Fantastic Beasts than I was for the films themselves, for the book films or whatever. But okay. Well, that's pretty cool.
Well, if I can find that tweet, I'll put it in the show notes. So.
Yeah, do that. Okay. Well, okay, so let's talk about before we get going, our big topic of the day, let's mm-hmm. talk about the month of March. We are going to be doing a kind of a campaign to try to build up support for the Lexicon. Nick did mention that there's that the new servers, things are getting more expensive, and they are. At the moment, this cost is being just paid mostly by you, Nick. But that's kind of where things are at right now. We would really like to not put advertising on the site. That is a big, huge goal of ours. I can't imagine where we would put it on our pages where it wouldn't look absolutely hideous. So that is our goal. So we're really going to be pushing a campaign in March to try to kind of up the support for the site and get a little bit more income coming in to be able to pay for some of this stuff. And so a couple of different things. First of all, if you go on the Lexicon itself, go up to the top, where it says the Harry Potter Lexicon in the upper left, if you drop down, there's a triangle menu there, and if you click on that menu, you're going to find Support the Lexicon. And that's where you want to go to find kind of ways that you can it can help us out. And one of them, of course, is Patreon. Patreon is a great way to do it. You basically pledge any amount, you know, from a dollar on up, per month to just kind of support the things that we're doing here, and that's a great way to do it, and that's kind of just kind of automatically happens every month, and you know, just a dollar, two, three, whatever. Obviously more is great too, but that's a great way to do it because that's just a nice little money that can come in every month and kind of help pay for the servers and things like this. So that's a great way to do it, and we're going to do a sort of a giveaway thing coming up for people who are Patreon supporters. And I'll tell you more about that, I think, at the end of the podcast. But that's one thing. If you can't actually do that with actually contributing money every month, you can go use the link there for Amazon. If you use that Amazon link, what happens is any shopping that you do, if you start from that Amazon link, any shopping that you do, as long as you have started with that link, a certain percentage of anything that you spend goes to the Lexicon, and it doesn't cost you any more. It just kind of kick a little bit back to us for having sent you there. And since we know a lot of people shop on Amazon, I mean, let's face it, we all do. If you're going to just do that anyway, just come on and start from that Amazon link when you do that, and you're going to be just helping us out. So that's another great way to do it. Third way, the loot crate. Now it says you again. I'm looking at your notes. You said the third Wizarding World loot crate is sold out, but only because it should ship any day now. Talk to me. Okay, whoa.
So
how many have there been?
So this will be the third Wizarding World crate.
Okay.
Our previous podcast was actually opening both the first and the second.
And that first one was where you got that New York Ghost shirt, right?
Yeah, one of our right now.
Yeah. I'm jealous. I'm just gonna admit it. I am like super jealous of all this stuff. So okay.
And the second one was where we got the watch.
Yeah.
The Deathly Hallows watch.
Yeah.
Which is very nice.
Yeah.
The third crate, which should ship now, it's a bi-monthly crate.
You subscribe and you get one every other month. Okay, cool.
Right, and so March is the next one. So mm-hmm. They've closed it out. So here, I've got the page up here. I just showed it to you. And it says, sold out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
Then that's going to be shipped. And I know I've watched you open two of them. So I'm excited to see what's in this. Oh, and this one's Hogwarts House Pride. Okay.
Yep. And this one says that... house-specific and Hogwarts-themed items specially created for loot crates. So, you know, most loot crates, you know, everybody gets the same crate, And even in the last couple of Wizarding World ones, they were the same. But this one, apparently, you know, when you join the Wizarding World crate, it asks you what your house is.
Right.
And so the...
Let me just ask you something, because, you know, I've got son, I happen to see he is. I wrote about this. He had one from Firefly, and it had some really cool stuff in. Now, is this stuff from what you just said? Is this stuff that they actually kind of commission themselves? So it's like stuff you're not going to like get everywhere else.
Sometimes there'll be something in the crate that is mass market. For example, the Niffler from for the first crate, you can buy that Niffler.
But some of these things, I mean, like that watch, I've not seen that around.
That watch did say, like, and they'll say on the items whether or not it's an exclusive item or not. And that watch was an exclusive item. They actually made it. I actually got to meet one of the people who is in charge of coming up with products for Loot Crate.
No kidding.
Yeah, I met him at last year's Silicon Valley Comic Con, and he was telling about how he does this, and you know, basically he just starts creating something, and then they go to whoever has the thing and says, "I want to make this," and they let him do it, or they ask him to change something, or
that is really cool.
Yeah, and so then okay. And so you'll find items that are, like, highly unusual, because they'll come up with something very unique. Like, one crate I got once had a oven mitt that was the Infinity Gauntlet from Marvel. I mean, it was...
Okay, but I think maybe that's why, because and I wrote about this, too. I've never been one who collects a bunch of little stuff. But when I see this stuff, some of it is just so unique and so interesting, and it just seems so much like it's not just another whatever, but it's something, you know, I mean, some of this stuff I'm really thinking, boy, I really could use that. I mean, not use it, okay, let's be honest, but I really would like to have some of that stuff, so that's pretty cool. So anyway, the point of all of this is that if you are interested in this kind of stuff, and frankly, we probably all are, even me, if you sign up for the Loot Crate thing and you use the link that's on our support page there to do it, and Nick, describe what they need to do in order to do
this. There's a link on the site. It goes to lootcrate.com/HPLexicon, and the link takes you to the Wizarding World crate. But once you're there, you can go get any of the crates if you want. And if you use promo code HPLexicon, you'll get a discount, which is great. Who doesn't like discounts?
Discounts are good.
And Loot Crate will pass a little money on to the Lexicon.
Cool. So that's a good way to do it then. So that's a good way to support us as well. So please consider doing that. As the expenses are you know, continuing every month, it's just really would be really helpful if we could get support on that. So anyway, let's move on from the crass commercial part of this podcast, and let's get into the meat of it, which is the talking about canon. In this case, we're going to talk about Horcruxes.
Well, there's lots to talk about Horcruxes.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Sorry, my wife coughed over there.
I know, I've all the nerve.
there's lots to talk about with Horcruxes. You know, I was just looking at the Horcrux page on the Lexicon, and it's so long.
Okay, but now you have to understand, I just got through editing that page, and I don't think it was that long until I got started editing and realized, number one, it's surprising what we don't know.
Right.
Because I thought, okay, I know pretty much every Horcrux. I know when it was made. I know pretty much how it got destroyed. But then when I started actually because I'm trying to create the events for our timeline, and I realized that I really was not quite sure. And so I went back to the interviews and things like this, and Rowling did say in an interview, she said that the diary was, the question was, what murders were committed to facilitate the creation of all the different Horcruxes. And she said the death of Moaning Myrtle was used for the diary. Mm-hmm. The death of Hepzibah Smith was used for the cup. A Muggle tramp was used for the locket. Bertha Jorkins was for Nagini. And an Albanian peasant was for the diadem. And Tom Riddle Sr. was for the ring.
Right.
Okay. So there's a couple of them in there that gave me problems when
yes.
it came to actually working out what had happened.
Me too.
Part of its timeline. For example, if we can figure out when the murder occurs, do we know then that also a Horcrux was created? Does it have to be right away? And here's the problem. If the diary was from the death of Moaning Myrtle, and
right.
the ring was from the death of Tom Riddle Sr.,
mm-hmm.
we see Tom Riddle Jr., Voldemort, we see him talking to Slughorn, and he's wearing the ring.
Right.
That's 1943. He killed Myrtle Myrtle was killed, and that's another problem, in 1942. Which means if he's wearing the ring, that means he's already killed his father. That means he's done two of the... at this point, he should have... If they were done like right after the murders, at this point, he's already committed two murders. He's already created two Horcruxes. So why is he asking Slughorn about this whole idea of creating multiple Horcruxes? He's already done it.
It's interesting. I thought Myrtle was 1944.
No, 1942. It's in his 16th year. It's when he's 15. He was born in 29. So the entire year of 1942, he was 15.
Interesting.
So the point being, even if it was 1943,
because the lexicon says June 1943.
Not anymore. That's what I'm saying. I just got through editing all this stuff and trying to sort out all this stuff and started to realize, and one of our editors, Claire, she got on. I was talking about this on our amongst the editors, and she came on and she said, I think you got your date wrong there, because it says that he killed his parents, his father and his grandparents, in his 15th year, which would be 1942, not 1943. So I had to go in and edit all sorts of things. So, but the point is, even if it was 1943, still that's two Horcruxes before, because he killed Myrtle in approximately June. He killed his parents in July or August because it was that summer.
Right.
After
your editing, what it says right now is that Tom Riddle Sr. was July or August 1942, and that Myrtle was June 1943.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do I have mixed up? See how confused I'm getting? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So, either way, whichever ones I screwed up.
The year he asked the question to Slughorn was the same year he set the basilisk loose.
So it's 1942 that he sets the basilisk loose, and he kills Myrtle.
This says it's 1943.
Okay, God, good Lord. Okay, so he kills his dad in 1942, July or August.
Right.
And then he's wearing the ring. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this does work out then. So if he's wearing the ring, then he has created one Horcrux already?
Mm-hmm. So he's created one Horcrux, and he's and the only thing he's confused about and he's asking about is... Is it even possible to make more than one? And is there any value in doing so?
Right. So, so then it does make sense. Because then in 1943, in June, right at the end of that year, is when he kills Myrtle. But he doesn't kill Myrtle.
Right.
That's another problem.
I've got that one down here later in the
notes?
Questions. But since you brought it up,
how
can killing Myrtle... be used to create the diary, because he didn't do it. The basilisk killed Myrtle.
Right.
And I'm going to get into this a little bit. It doesn't exactly seem like it was a particularly purposeful murder either. She just happened to open the door, and there was the basilisk, and then she died.
Yeah. So then your assumption is that the murder that we're talking about has to be premeditated, has to be a planned thing.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, in your opinion.
So we're trying to figure out what's involved with creating a Horcrux.
Right.
Right.
So what you're saying is that there has to be some intention. I'm going to go create a Horcrux. Let's see who I can kill. Right. And maybe cast some spells, whatever it is that has to happen. You prepare yourself, you get ready. Okay, I'm going to go commit a murder. Okay, now I can imagine a scenario where Tom Riddle is thinking, because now think of the basilisk, instead of thinking of the basilisk as the murderer, think of a basilisk as the murder weapon. And he says to himself, he says, okay, I want to create a Horcrux. However, I am a student at Hogwarts. I can't just pull out go kill somebody. I can't do an Avada Kedavra in the corridors. I'll get in trouble. I have to find some way of killing somebody which is not going to be as obvious as it's not going to look like a murder. It's not going to look like I murdered somebody. So if I get this basilisk, which I've discovered when I opened the Chamber of Secrets, I've got this basilisk at my command. If I get this basilisk out, I can find somebody that and just have that person get killed by the basilisk, and hopefully that will count. And so he goes to get it without realizing that Myrtle Warren is in that bathroom stall. And so he opens the Chamber of Secrets. He gets the basilisk to come out, and he's prepared because he's going to go do it. Maybe even has a victim in mind. He's going to do it. But as it so happens, Myrtle Warren happens to be in that stall, comes out, and fortuitously enough, gets killed. That was easy. I didn't even have to go through my big elaborate plan. I just got my murder. So he sends the basilisk back down into the pipes, and he does whatever the rest of the procedure is. But then we're going to bump into the thing. Do you have to do the murder right away? I mean, do you have to do the whatever it is to make the Horcrux right away after you commit the murder?
Which leads to another one. Let's talk about Frank Bryce and Bertha Jorkins.
Oh, that's... yeah, okay.
All right, so Rowling said that the murder used to create Nagini, or to turn Nagini into a Horcrux,
mm-hmm.
was Bertha Jorkins.
Mm-hmm.
And Dumbledore says in Half-Blood Prince 23 that Voldemort didn't even get the idea to make Nagini into a Horcrux until he, quote, used Nagini to kill a Muggle man. That would be Frank Bryce. But by the time he kills Frank Bryce, which, by the way, he didn't use Nagini to do. He definitely AK'd Frank Bryce.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, but, and, let's say he got that idea then. We're talking days after he's already killed Bertha Jorkins, but probably even weeks.
Oh, I think it is. Think about the fact that they've been wondering, what happened to Bertha Jorkins, for a while now. But there's a pretty simple explanation for that. Mm-hmm. Number one, the main point is that this is all just Dumbledore speculating. He even says, he's just guessing. So he's guessing wrong. He's just saying, this is what I'm guessing happened, because he doesn't know all of, what happened exactly. So he's saying, this is my speculation. I think that this Muggle man that you saw killed, okay, well, let's go to that. That must have been when he decided to turn Nagini into a Horcrux, not knowing that, as a matter of fact, no, Nagini got turned into a Horcrux long before that, back when Bertha Jorkins got killed.
I suppose it's possible that he's just wrong.
I think he is. I think, again, simplest explanation, he's wrong. We got an easy out because it's Dumbledore talking, and we tend to think of it as that, well, it's Dumbledore talking, but it's Rowling giving us information. Well, I think if we're going to step outside the story, no, Rowling screwed up. But but there's an easy way to explain it away in the fact that it was Dumbledore's guess, and he guessed wrong.
So I've been going from a different perspective. I mean, Dumbledore was so right about what the Horcruxes were. right down to knowing that Nagini was a Horcrux.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a bit of a jump, I think.
Right. That, and of course, we're not given any real reasoning as to why, other than his theory, right? I have to go with the assumption that it's true. In which case, my thought is, Dumbledore says that he liked to save Horcruxes for particularly meaningful murders.
Right.
Right? And certainly he premeditated killing Bertha Jorkins. He had had broken her mind. Mm-hmm. Right? He had gleaned information that he thought was the information he needed to, one, come back to full bodiment, and two, get rid of Harry Potter at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So he would have considered that a pretty significant murder. So I get that Bertha Jorkins would be used to create a Horcrux.
Right.
If you don't have to make the Horcrux right away, that's an if, because we don't know that. Then doing the preparation, premeditating, making the murder, and then saying, "Well, now I need to figure out what to put it in." Of course, the question there is where is his soul during? Where is this portion of his soul during the? Because the statement is that it is the act of murder that splits the soul.
Right, but that doesn't mean that piece of soul leaves the host. So your soul is split, so now it's in two pieces, but it's still inside of you until you finish the ritual. That would make sense to me.
Right.
So you're walking around with a damaged soul, which I think was mentioned. I'd have to look it up, but I feel like somewhere it actually said flat out that there's a damage, that you damage your soul, or that you have a damaged soul. And I think isn't that sort of the implication of why he changes from looking like a fairly handsome young man when he's at school to when he reemerges in the mid-60s, is like he's looking really strange and more like the Voldemort we're going to know later kind of a thing. But see, here's the thing. If you say that the murders are supposed to be important murders, then look at his list. A Muggle tramp.
Right.
There's an Albanian peasant?
Yeah, there's a couple of these that don't seem particularly significant.
Well, I guess, and again, we can within the story, we can say, well, yeah, he got a little desperate. He was running out of options and running out of ideas, and it seemed like a good idea to have all these fancy people, but when it came right down to it, he just had to kind of use whatever was at hand.
Peasant would be, he went on this quest to find the diadem.
Mm-hmm.
He got really excited when he found it, and he just couldn't wait to make it a Horcrux.
Couldn't wait to make a Horcrux. What a horrible thing. So he just killed the first poor little peasant he saw.
I just can't wait to put a piece of my soul in this hat.
Boy. Yeah. And you know, the whole thing, I mean, think about it. I mean, this is we're jumping around a little bit. But so he gets this ring, and he hides it in this hovel, this broken-down pile of junk house underneath the floorboards or whatever. Did he cast spells to make sure that was it now unplottable or something so nobody was going to mess with it? I mean, that's just so weird to think about that would be. I mean, with the elaborateness of the sea cave and the inferi and the bowl of really awful potion. How come the rest of them didn't have all this fancy kind of protection? How come it was only the locket, the one that, as it turned out, he didn't even have the Horcrux, the actual Horcrux in it after, because it got stolen. None of the rest of them have that kind of protection. It's like that was the one that he had the time to do it right. And then after that, it kind of fell apart. When he killed Hepzibah Smith, and then he set up this elaborate thing. Here, I'm going to put the locket in here. But he didn't put the locket in there until, 1979, I think it was. Or 1970. Yeah, I think it was 1979. That's a long time.
Right.
So what did he do? He was just carrying it around until then, when he finally decided to build this huge, elaborate trap, and then the rest of them, nothing. You know, I'll just give this one to Lucius. I'll give this one to Bellatrix, and it's like he really kind of
it's
got really now, really amazing on one, and then he just kind of really got lazy about it after that.
Yeah, some of them are really weird. Like I get that he wanted to hide something at Hogwarts.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you read this little bit where you're reading his thought patterns, and like, he is the most arrogant person you could possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, nobody could be as clever as me to hide this in the Room of Requirement. Nobody could find the Room of Requirement. I'm the only one. The room was full of hidden junk.
Right. Everybody had been putting stuff there. Why don't you put it in the Chamber of Secrets, which you know nobody knows where that is?
Yeah.
This thing has been lost for generations. I mean, why put it in the Room of Requirement unless you wanted to have a really cool scene of a fire or something? But, you know, he's really, I've always thought that, you know, as villains go, he's not particularly clever.
No, he's not.
That's always been
bright.
My impression. No, he's not. He's I mean, the side villains are much better.
Yeah,
you know, the Umbridges and the, you know, even the Carrows are pretty disgusting, you know.
Even Lucius, right? I mean,
yeah, really. Yeah, at least until, you know, anyway. So, yeah, I guess the point is that it's a very inconsistent pattern with him. It's almost like he really, really, really... It's like one of these people who kind of sets his mind to doing something, and the first time around does it really, really well, and then he kind of loses interest, or, you know, it took a lot more work than I thought, and, yeah, kind of whipped through the rest of these real quick here a minute, you know. But anyway, so we're stuck with... I think we're still stuck with... One or two mysteries. My big mystery was solved by my own writing. The dates of the ring. Yeah, you can tell. I tell you something. When you edit this stuff, because even with our system where things do interconnect, you start editing these things, and oh my goodness, the complexity of something like this. And you think, okay, where else is this talked about? There's Horcruxes. All right. Then there's the events that involve the Horcruxes. Those all have to be checked. I still have two that have no dates on them. Because we still have the big mystery of, if we know when the murder is, does that tell us when the Horcrux was created?
Not really. Our
whole inconsistency thing kind of suggests not necessarily. So... We don't know when several of these Horcruxes were actually created. So when I'm going through this and I'm editing, it takes, you know, I'll spend hours at this, believe it or not, you know.
I believe it.
Believe it or not. Well, yeah, you believe it. Because I wrote this stupid thing. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. But the point is that it is so complicated and complex how these all interconnect. And I guess maybe there's part of me thinks, well, no wonder... That if Rowling gets asked these questions out of the blue, that she maybe doesn't always get all the answers quite right.
Right.
Because it is complicated.
Yeah. It seems weird. Like, you know, it's definitely contradict. Like you say, it's a contradiction to say he uses particularly, you know, significant murders, and then he made one with a Muggle tramp. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And again, I guess within the story, I can see where that makes sense. Because again, once he was gonna kill Harry and his parents, or at least Harry, and that was gonna be a Horcrux. So all the rest of the Horcruxes were created at that point,
right?
Except Nagini,
right?
Right.
And what was he going to make into a Horcrux at that point?
Instead of Nagini. Yeah, what was it? Yeah, there's another good question. Because he was out of, you know, objects which belonged to the Founders.
Well, that kind of lends to the whole theory that you don't have to do it right away.
Yeah. Yeah,
see,
because...
this comes... although I did wanted to say something about Harry and the whole accidental Horcrux thing.
Okay.
You know, the way Dumbledore phrases it, that at that point his soul was so fractured that it just leaked out when the spell was rebounded.
Mm-hmm.
My thinking on the matter is, so even Dumbledore thinks he probably would have used Harry to make a Horcrux.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. Yeah.
So if you have to do stuff beforehand,
right,
like I'm theorizing.
Right. I think, right, it makes sense. Uh-huh.
Then, and, you know, oh, he had selected a target.
Uh-huh.
Right? Harry. He's cast a killing curse at Harry. You know, he had done all the preparation in advance. What the unexpected thing was is, you know, you say it just still, normally it would just hang around in your body, right? And his body was destroyed. So,
right.
So that's, I think that is why Harry became a Horcrux.
Sure.
Because he did the act. He murdered Harry. It didn't work, but he, but
right,
he did it.
Well,
right?
and he just got through killing Lily and James, so there certainly were murders.
Right, but I think the preparation, the evidence supports that the preparation has to have a target. Like, you know, I'm doing the preparation, I'm going to make a Horcrux. It's going to be when I kill that one.
Okay, and I would say that the death of Myrtle means that that isn't what happened.
Maybe
I would say that.
Kill Myrtle.
Oh, okay. So maybe he knew that she was going to be in there.
Well,
and
she's
maybe
in there crying all the time. And that's
maybe Olive Hornby is somebody that he's kind of convinced, he's kind of manipulated her to be an accomplice. So, okay, yeah, that could be.
Maybe
she
that was...
would be,
or maybe she was in there crying when he went down to the chamber in the first, you know, and she was still crying when he came out. And he's like, I'm so sick of this crying girl.
but it makes sense. In that way, sure, it would make sense that he knew, okay, I'm going to get that. I'm going to kill someone. I'm going to make a Horcrux. And, hey, here's a good target because she just hangs around crying in there all the time. So he gets Olive Hornby to kind of instigate the crying session, and then goes in there himself and gets the basilisk to come out and kills her. So yeah, that would make sense. So then it would be premeditated with that particular person in mind. But what you're saying is that he's premeditated it to kill Harry.
Right.
It rebounds.
So
it destroys his body,
murder,
but the tearing. The
still
soul
happens.
Is torn, and. You know, Rowling has said that she has Dumbledore refer to Harry as a Horcrux, but only as because it's just a lot easier to do that than to get into a big, huge discussion of the fact that he wasn't technically a Horcrux. And that's what she said in, I think it was in the Pottercast interview, that she said that he wasn't actually a Horcrux technically because it didn't go through all the right process, but that he was, for all practical purposes, he was a Horcrux, and that would make sense
that,
too. If...
I think that you know didn't complete the whole process. I think that was whatever that thing at the end is.
Mm-hmm.
The act of taking that soul out of your body and putting it in the object.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part. You know, she refers to. She says she has this thing figured out, and she won't tell anybody what it is. But she says that it's something particularly gruesome. I think that's the word she used, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
So
lovely.
I think, you know, as you mentioned, okay, so you split the soul, but the soul's still, both parts are in your body. There's probably something really, probably even painful that you have to do to get it out.
Yeah, I don't even want to start to think about it. Yeah,
well,
but
do.
Okay.
But
okay, you do that. When you get it figured out, you write an article for the Lexicon, and I'll maybe read it. I'll skim it. But so the idea would be that there would be some preparation beforehand,
right?
And then
part of that preparation is premeditation.
And you'd premeditate. This is a person I'm going to kill, and you would do that, and that person would die, and then your soul would be damaged, would be ripped, and then you complete the process of taking that piece of soul out of you and putting it into this object, and that's the way a Horcrux is created. Now.
Then you protect it by handing it to Lucius Malfoy.
Yes, because, you know, I can think of no safer place, you know, except Hogwarts, than Lucius Malfoy. who, you know, and the thing is, and then...
Although, Dumbledore does say that he's, that the diary was intended to fall into others' hands.
The point is, I think, that if you're going to give it to Lucius Malfoy or anyone, if you have specific plans for it, if you have specific intentions for it, if you want him to keep it in a certain way, you don't just toss it over to him and say, hey, keep this for me, will you? I mean, you're going to talk to him about it. You're going to say, you know, I'm not going to go into detail, but this is an extremely important thing. You need to keep this under lock and key. Protect this with everything. And he didn't apparently do this because Lucius, you know, didn't mind just handing it off to, you know, Ginny Weasley as a method of just trying to, you know, basically get back at Arthur for creating the law that he created that was a thorn in the side of the Malfoys. So,
but that means, you know, that Malfoy had to know what the Horcrux was capable of, that it was capable of causing somebody else to.
Oh, I don't think all he wanted it to be. I think his intention was simply to have Ginny caught with a very, you know, with a demonstrably dark magic item. I don't think he had any idea what it actually would do. I think he just thought, because I think dark magic items give off an aura, which is detectable. That's kind of the way I look at it. And so this is a dark magic item, and it would be obvious when anybody would search her or her stuff, and, oh, Arthur Weasley's daughter was caught with this terrible dark magic item. You know, I think that's what he's going after. He's probably never even heard of Horcruxes, you know?
Oh, I don't think he knows it's a Horcrux, but I think he knows that...
Or even that there is such a thing. I think most wizards and witches don't even realize that there is such a thing as a Horcrux.
Oh, I agree. The way it's referred to in the conversation with Slughorn is, you know, a piece of rare magic I came across, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but what I mean is whether he knows anything about Horcrux. I don't think he knows about Horcruxes. Surely he doesn't know that it's a piece of Voldemort's soul, or he wouldn't have been so cavalier with it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I do think he knows that it can communicate with people.
You think so?
I think so.
Well,
and I think, well, he knows that the purpose of it, you know, the way, you know, Memory Riddle calls himself, you know, he says that he preserved himself so that he could someday lead another to complete the work. So I think Lucius knew that by giving this diary to somebody, he was going to allow the chamber to be open. Just and if he didn't, you know, just giving somebody a dark magic object and letting them be caught with it, that's not so terrible of a thing that Dobby is going to go, you know, out of his way to maim, hurt, block Harry.
Okay, but that brings up another whole of it. That's another podcast of the whole problem of Chamber of Secrets and what Dobby could possibly have known, and what he was so afraid of, et cetera, because it's the more you dig into that, the more and more you realize that it doesn't make any sense. So, but yeah, we've got as far as the Horcruxes go, we've kind of come down on the idea that it's. A Horcrux is created with premeditated plans, magic, murder, the soul piece. Are we saying then that there can be some amount of delay?
I mean, there has to be at least some delay, right? I mean...
Well, yeah, because if you go out and kill somebody, then you have to go somewhere and kind of finish the ritual.
You have to, you know, go put the, you know... It can't be, I mean, but how long of a delay can that be? And my question related to that is, okay, let's say that there are weeks or months between the time he killed Bertha Jorkins and
turning Nagini into a Horcrux.
Into a Horcrux. Yeah. Is he more or less vulnerable during that time?
Oh, that's a good point. It's almost like how much how much urgency is there in getting this done?
Right.
If and partly just because, hey, that's one more safety device I can create. Let me quick make it just in general. But also, yeah, if he's walking around in this damaged state of, I've now ripped my soul, but I haven't finished the magic, is this something where he really is going to need to, get this done as quickly as possible, or he'll, you know, like you say, be more vulnerable, be in a weakened state, something like
and
that.
Could that be why he would choose Nagini, something so... it's not a good idea.
A good idea at all.
Yeah.
Right.
If for no other reason, he wants to be immortal.
Right.
But he chooses to anchor a piece of his immortality in something that itself is mortal.
Right. Good point. I don't know how long snakes live, but,
Does the fact that it's a Horcrux make Nagini immortal too?
And we could argue that Nagini is not any known species of snake, and therefore is probably some sort of magical creature, as opposed to being just a Muggle snake that happened to be, co-opted into being his companion. It's interesting because I've had this assumption that the creation of the Horcrux would have happened relatively soon, right after the murder. So if Hepzibah Smith is murdered in, 1955, I'd have to go back and check my notes on when she was killed. I think it's 1965. Nope. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Whenever that is, can we then assume that that's when the Horcrux is created as well? And that's the thing that I don't think we have a way of making that assumption. I mean, we might, but we have to figure something out to put it into the lexicon.
1955. Right,
55, thank you. So if we're going to create an event that says, Voldemort kills Hepzibah Smith and creates a Horcrux, well, we really can't say that. But we could say Voldemort kills Hepzibah Smith and with the intention of using her murder to create a Horcrux. That might be a way to talk ourselves out of it, out of that problem.
I think that particular murder, I think he would have made the cup right away.
I agree. I think all of them have to happen.
He's stealing the cup, and he's killing Hepzibah Smith to do it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
In my opinion, that one's right away. The
might as well finish
right
the job.
I'm wondering, I bet there is some, I bet when your soul is split, it does create a form of vulnerability.
Sure. I'm thinking that the soul has now a little marker on that says best if used by, and has an expiration date.
Exactly.
That's my guess.
And so, I bet so let's assume that it's longer than we think, but not an infinitely long period
of time. So, like, weeks, possibly as much as months, but not more than that. Right. You're not going to go a couple of years.
Right. So he kills Bertha Jorkins, decides he's going to use Bertha Jorkins. He thinks this is a significant death.
Huh? I'm just imagining Voldemort. He's going bad. He's going off. Got to use that fast or we're going to have to pour it down the sink.
And he's killed Bertha Jorkins saying, this is a great murder. I'm going to make a Horcrux. And then he spends the next month trying to figure out what to make into a Horcrux and can't think of anything.
And he's, trying to, because he's also in that time trying to travel from Albania to Britain.
Right.
Which, remember, he doesn't have he doesn't have the facility for making port keys, I wouldn't think. He's got, Wormtail with him. There's a big help. And so the two of them have to find their way back to Britain. And, you can apparate relatively short distances, but that's not going to be a one-shot deal. It's going to be something that takes some time. And the whole time, you got to keep milking Nagini and creating this potion. That had to be a pretty complicated trip.
Right.
From Albania to Britain. And so, if you figure that in there, not a whole lot of time to sit around and make Horcruxes.
So then, Nagini tells... The only part that Nagini was used to kill Frank Bryce is the fact that it was Nagini who alerted
Voldemort. There's a Muggle guy standing out in the hallway listening to every word we say. Yeah.
So at that point, he's thinking, I'm running out of time. I have to make a Horcrux. Hey, there's Nagini. I'll put it in Nagini.
So now I wonder, now again, stepping out of the story, if you read it, says, this is what Dumbledore says. He says, I am sure he was intending to make his final Horcrux with your death. As we know, he failed. After an interval of some years, however, he used Nagini to kill an old Muggle man, and it might then have occurred to him to turn her into his last Horcrux. She underlines the Slytherin connection that enhances Lord Voldemort's mystique. So now, think about this. He uses Nagini to kill an old Muggle man. This is what Dumbledore says. But he could not have planned that. If he's planning to make a Horcrux, he wasn't planning to kill Frank Bryce. That was happenstance. He didn't even know he was there. Nagini told him.
But and Rowling says that it wasn't Frank Bryce used to make Nagini. It was Bertha Jorkins.
It was Bertha Jorkins. So I just think that Dumbledore is just flat out wrong here.
I think he made it when he
killed Bertha Jorkins. I think he then did the Horcrux. Same thing. I think he's in desperate, frantic, I'm almost dead here. I've got to have my Horcruxes because I'm as close to death as I'm going to get. I can't afford to wait around. I've got to have every Horcrux. And he took care of it. I think he finished that up. So that's my opinion. I think he had that Horcrux made before he came back to Britain. Dumbledore, however, when Dumbledore says this, is in Half-Blood Prince, so he knows that Dumbledore killed, or that Voldemort killed Bertha Jorkins at this point.
Yes.
But why does he then assume that he used Nagini to kill an old Muggle man? Then you wonder, are we seeing a little artifact, a little relic, a remnant of some change of the story, of some, you know, rewrite that she didn't catch that this was referring to, you know, a different version of that scene or something like that, and she never caught that needed to be edited, and so we're seeing a little bit of a flash of a little glimpse of a ghost plot or of a different version of the story.
Possible.
That's kind
a
of
version
a cool
where
idea.
He killed Frank Bryce first.
Or that somewhere in here she had written that opening scene was not written the way it is now, but it was written that he knew that Frank Bryce was there. He was going to use him. He planned it, and he, you know, sent the snake after him or something like this. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I could imagine that she would have written that and then changed her mind, or, you know, decided to write it differently and then forgot, you know, when she... Oh, wait a minute. This is a different book, though.
No.
That's a great... I love my theory, which just fell apart, because this is Half-Blood Prince.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, Goblet of Fire was two books ago, so, yeah.
Yeah, this is...
Yeah, no excuse.
A long time.
Yeah.
Considering all the time between Goblet and Order.
Yeah, so basically Dumbledore's just wrong.
Mm-hmm. Or... He's sitting around waiting for a month and a half to put the soul in something.
No, he's just wrong. So, well, because it says he used Nagini to kill an old Muggle man, and they didn't use Nagini to kill an old Muggle man. It didn't even happen. So Dumbledore is clearly guessing wrong, even if it was Frank Bryce.
Here's another theory.
Okay.
Maybe we're just presuming it's Frank Bryce.
Okay, so it could have been another old Muggle man. How does Dumbledore know that? Because, you know,
somebody
Dumbledore...
some old Muggle in Albania.
Ooh. Could be. Maybe that's the Albanian
he
peasant.
He kills...
Oh, no, that doesn't work.
No, he's not the peasant. We don't know.
See what I mean? I'm losing track, for goodness sake. I started
here's the other thing,
and I'm still wrong.
I don't think, and I still have a problem with the basilisk too, but I don't think that ordering Nagini to eat somebody, like, I don't think he could make a Horcrux out of killing Snape.
That would have been a really good one to make a Horcrux out of, though.
But he didn't do it. He didn't kill Snape. But, which also, but he, why does he think ordering Nagini to kill Snape is going to give him control? If he wants to...
He doesn't... Well, because if you look at the history, the story, think about the story of the Elder Wand that was told by Xenophilius Lovegood. Mm-hmm. The fact that it passed from hand to hand because people killed the previous owner. So there's lore to suggest that that's what it was. Whether it's true or not is another question. So that
but
may
he,
be what Voldemort believes.
But he didn't kill Snape.
You could go back to the the snake was merely the weapon, the murder weapon.
Well, he does have a tendency to go into Nagini.
Okay, yeah. So anyway, basically what we're saying is that we're not sure. After all of this,
our
and clearly I have my dates all wrong. All this discussion, and my hope was I was going to come out of this discussion knowing exactly what dates to put on those events that are still sitting there. You realize that if you run a timeline right now, those two events are at the very beginning because they have no date. The creation of two Horcruxes. So So maybe one day we'll have to ask Rowling, but... I wonder, okay, again, stepping out of the story, I wonder if she has actually worked out all of these details or if, you know, whether she's got a little timeline of exactly what happened or if, you know, by the time she got done writing, she didn't really have a perfect handle on it either. And when people ask her questions, she comes up with the best answer she can, kind of like Charlie Weasley's age, you know. And, no. She's, you know, that's once we go there, I mean, then all bets are off.
Who's listening over here? IM'd me with an interesting theory that I should read.
Yeah.
Because she's listening intently. She really wants to be part of the conversation.
So let's hear her IM.
All right. She says, when Harry has the dream of Frank's death, he is watching as another party in the room, not as Frank, nor as Nagini, or as Voldemort.
True. Yeah.
Could the reason he was there be because he was using that split piece of soul in Voldemort from the death of Bertha? Like, it's just kind of hovering around the room following Voldemort around.
That's true. Why would he be seeing it third party? Okay. So basically, we didn't know what was going on, and now thanks to your wife, we really don't know what's going on.
Yep.
Tell Barbara thanks a lot.
Steve says thanks a lot, Barbara. Because now we really don't know what's going on.
Because now we're really confused. Okay. All right. Well, we better think about wrapping this one up because I have a feeling we're going to spin wheels for a while. But what I love about this is that we just basically set ourselves up for another very nice conversation. And yes. I would love to toss this out there and hear what other people think because of the whole situation. And this is another wide open question of why did Harry see what he saw in this dream? Because normally he is dreaming as if he is Voldemort.
Right.
Right?
Or in the case of when he saw the attack on Mr. Weasley, he was
Nagini. Because there was a Horcrux there.
Right.
Or was Voldemort possessing Nagini to attack Mr. Weasley?
Well, that's what Dumbledore says. Dumbledore says... You entered the snake because that's where Voldemort happened to be at the time.
Okay.
Or where his mind happened to be at the time.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, clearly we have this entirely, worked out now. We're all set. We're good to go. I'm glad that all the listeners out there are going, you have made it all so clear.
Yeah,
Thank you.
We've solved it. The
we'll all go home now.
All right.
So
no more discussion.
So basically, we're going to have to talk about this some more. I would love to get a bunch of feedback on this from other people, and so just to hear what other people have to say, other theories, other ideas on this. Barbara coming in on that just reminds me once again just how often we make assumptions, and our, when we talk with other people, we discover that they have a different way of looking at things or a different point of view or a different idea or some other bit of canon that we hadn't been thinking of, which is fascinating. Yeah. I absolutely love this stuff.
I don't think I ever really put much thought into the fact that why is it a third-party view?
Right.
It's always kind of
and so those are those kind of things. That it's amazing because what we end up with is we end up with these wonderful discussions, and the more other voices we get in, the more we kind of go, oh, okay, that makes sense, or could be this, could be that. So feel free, if you're listening and want to chime in, feel free to throw some comments on there. Let's have some discussion. Let's see what we can come up with, because next time we do another episode, we're more than happy to consider continue talking about some of this stuff and maybe address that issue if there's some other thoughts on there. We're getting to the end of this podcast. I'm saying that the tone that I am, because I was hoping to be a little bit less perplexed at the end of it. But so that's about it for the episode 25. Once again, we want to thank Harry and the Potters for the use of the music that we have at the beginning and at the end of the show. If you hopefully you already know, but just in case you don't, this is a podcast of the Harry Potter Lexicon, which is a website which has been around since 2000, and it's the address is www.hp-lexicon.org, and it is basically your kind of central clearinghouse for information, for canon information about the Harry Potter books, about the Wizarding World, about all of the things that J.K. Rowling has created in this particular fantasy world. Before we go, I have one thing I do want to toss out there. Sometimes we like to throw out things that have caught our eye lately, and I do want to toss one out there because this caught my eye, and I have a question about this, and I don't know the answer. I've seen this symbol, and it is a symbol of which is associated with Macusa, and it brings up the point of what our giveaway is that we're going to be doing for our Patreon subscribers. Our Patreon people, we have received from a company called King Ice a very, very beautiful necklace. And this thing is it's a Macusa key is what it is. It's white gold. And it's really, I was surprised. I just got it arrived today, and I'm holding it in my hand right now. Surprisingly heavy, by the way. It's about an inch and a half long. It is absolutely beautiful. This thing is, it's got the Macusa symbol at the top. It's got this key with all these gems in it. It's just a beautiful, beautiful piece, and it's got a nice heavy chain. What we're going to do for those that subscribe on Patreon, in the month of March, or if you already were, anyone who signs up in March or who already has signed up, at the end of April, you're going to have to be in a Patreon subscriber for a couple of months there. At the end of April or thereabouts, we are going to do a random drawing of everyone who's a Patreon subscriber, and the winner is going to get this lovely necklace. And we'll put the link in the show notes to that a picture of that so you can see what it looks like. And I'll write a little something in the on the blog as well with pictures and so you can see what it is we're talking about. Absolutely beautiful piece. And we will give that away to one of our Patreon subscribers at that time. One thing I wanted to throw in there, which is where I kind of started with this, is that they have on their website, they have another necklace. This is not the one that we're going to be giving away, but it's triangular, mm-hmm. and it has a very weird, interesting symbol on it. And I have no idea what this symbol is.
I don't either. Nick, I'm trying to stare at it too, and I'm like, I can't tell what it is at all.
Is it? It almost looks like two faces, you know, looking at each other left and right, or another one looking down. I've not seen this symbol before. I don't know what it's supposed to be, but it says Macusa at the top. It's a beautiful symbol. I mean, it's really intricate and interesting. So you've not seen this either?
I haven't seen anything with that symbol.
Maybe we have to wait till we get the film.
The symbol is so weird. I can't even tell what It's just a very strange squiggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the fact that this is an officially licensed product. I mean, they're not just making this stuff up. And so somehow this is connected with the film and the Magical Congress in the United States of America, or that wouldn't be on there. So I'm just curious where this is from. Like I said, maybe we'll have to wait till we get the Blu-ray and can freeze frame things, and we may spot it somewhere. Maybe it's on things and we just didn't notice it when we were watching the film, but I wouldn't have noticed it because I wouldn't have known I was looking for it, I guess. So anyway, that's kind of what caught my eye lately, is this symbol. So if anybody knows, if you know the answer to that, let us know. We'll put the picture in the show notes, and when I write up my write-up about this lovely key, which I'm looking at it again. This is quite something. It really is. When I do the blog post about that, I'll put a little note in there too, and maybe I'll put a picture of that for people to be able to check that out. And by all means, check out King Ice. They've got a nice kind of a variety. They've got a number of different necklaces and so, which I think that, the ones of the eagles are pretty cool too. I'm looking at the pictures that Nick just threw up on my screen here. So really
like
cool stuff.
I like the eagles. That's my
Yeah, they're very
that's
cool.
The one I think is cool.
All right. Well, anyway, so, by all means, take a look at that. Check that out. Look for a blog post from me with some more information about that. I'll try to do that over the weekend. Just a really cool piece. So you had said, because we talked about this, you were going to throw out a question for the day. So you want to do that on our way out the door?
Yeah, so I've, one of my favorite YouTube channels does something kind of interesting. They end every podcast or every one of their episodes with a question of the day. And I thought this would be a great way to kind of, like you said, keep the conversation going and see if anybody else can help us, get rid of this perplexing stuff we have. So the question of the day that I wrote down is, do you think that the murder has to be premeditated? And would Harry have to become a Horcrux if Voldemort hadn't been planning? Would Harry have become a Horcrux if Voldemort hadn't been planning on making a Horcrux from his murder? So if it hadn't been, if he hadn't been planning on doing it, would it have happened? So
in other words, when he went to Godric's Hollow, you're asking if he had not planned to make a Horcrux, if he hadn't done any planning on this, would that have not happened?
Whatever this preparation is that we believe that you have to do before.
Okay.
So that's our question. So everybody, write down your answers to that in the comments, or comment on anything about our discussion on Horcruxes. Prove us wrong. Prove us right.
Break through the fog of perplexing confusion that we're left in as we talk about this subject.
Yeah, but definitely use the comments field. I look forward to reading what people have to say and answering back.
All right. Okay, well, very good. This is we're going to wrap it up here. We're running past an hour, so and Nick, we got to do another one soon. It's been a while since we've done these, and it is so much fun doing these. So we've got to start doing these a little more often again and kick out some more of these. So this is Steve Vander Ark from the Harry Potter Lexicon,
and I'm Nick Moline,
Tech Wizard, and thanks for listening.